Hi, everybody. Today is Tuesday, June 17th, 2025, and our friend Leith Maruf is back with us. Welcome back, Leith.
Great to be with you, Nima.
Let's get started, Leith, with what's going on between Iran and Israel. While the United States pretended that they want to negotiate with Iran on Sunday, the day before they have started to attack Iran with their proxy, Israel. And what's your take on what has happened, and from what you've seen, from you, what you've heard, from the experience you had in those moments? We know that a lot of news came out of Iran and in the Middle East, but how do you see the way that Iran is responding to Israel?
Okay, well, let's start with the treachery of Trump. I've watched a couple of interviews with Iranian generals, the new in command, and according to them, they already knew that Trump was trying to trick them into feeling safe so the attack will come. They were prepared for this, and they also have been prepared for a full war with the United States. They know that the Israelis cannot do anything to harm the Iranian capabilities. It will require the entry of the war, into the war of the whole might of NATO. What they didn't expect was that there will be all these infiltration units, similar to what happened in Russia just a week before that, with these drones and ATGMs. And in fact, the vast majority of the attacks inside Iran that are not on the border with Iraq or close to the border in the northeast, where the Israeli and Western jets are firing missiles, everything that we see happening in Tehran and in other places was conducted by these infiltration teams. And in fact, there's these videos of people firing ATGMs inside Tehran on targets that are like within the neighborhood that they are stationed at. And that's how those assassinations happened on the first night. So now that this is done, let's look at what has been the response of Iran. And I think Iran was able, as a state, and a military, it's not like a militia, to immediately fill the gaps that are there in the structures. And the plans, because the plans were already set up prior to this assassination, given the fact that the Iranian government and military knew what they're walking into, especially after the fall of Damascus and the attacks on Yemen, those plans are actually now active. The commands of different regions and weapons are totally independent, and they're just not even communicating with each other and just following the set up plan right there. And up until now, I think Iran has shown the world that is able to sustain the blows of the West and to land crucial hits on the Zionist colony that we've never seen before.
Leith, how did you find the behavior of the Arab states, Turkey, all these countries that were somehow, in the case of Gaza, they were somehow playing both sides, but right now, when it comes to the confrontation between Iran and Israel, it's something beyond that. They know how devastating that would devastating that would be if something big happens in the Middle East. Can you understand their behavior right now?
Well, I think we should be very weary and careful when reading those statements of the Saudis or the Qataris and the Emiratis that are condemning the attack on Iran. Because if your viewers don't remember, there was an interview with MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince of the Saudi kingdom, in 2018, just before Trump got power the first time, or right after, where he called the Ayatollah the new Hitler. And he said that, Iran is acting like the Nazis and expanding and taking over Yemen and Iraq and Syria and Lebanon, and somebody has to put them in their place, and that he should be killed. That was an interview by MBS on American television. So if we are stupid, we would think that MBS changed his mind somehow, that he stopped thinking that the Ayatollah is Hitler, and he stopped thinking that Israel and the U.S. should destroy Iran. That I'm not a child, so I have some capabilities of thinking, and I understand right now that the role of the Saudis and the Emiratis and the Qataris is to constantly make these statements condemning Israel, to make sure that the oil and gas of the Gulf that is owned by the Americans, that is financing the British military and the Israeli military and the American military, is safe. So, of course, all of those statements are fake. And much of the intelligence gathering, infiltration, what have you, has been done by listening posts in those countries, in Qatar, Saudi, and Emirates. Many of the terrorists that are being caught right now committing those crimes inside Iran are Sunnis from the Ahwaz or Sunnis from Balochistan that are members of groups that are funded directly by the Saudis and the Emiratis and the Qataris. It's, the evidence is overwhelming to tell us how much involvement is there by these countries in the attack on Iran. And this is above and beyond, of course, the interception of Iranian missiles and drones by these countries, and or even the involvement of the Emirati Air Force flying over Jordan right now, trying to intercept Iran's drones as they travel over Jordan. This is the basic. Now, Turkey, maybe there's a true worry in Turkey, because Turkey is a neighbor to Iran, and if there's a big war in Iran, there will be millions of Iranians crossing into Turkey. It will be a chaotic situation. And when we talk about Pakistan, I think those statements from the Pakistani military and the Pakistani government are the most truthful. Because Pakistan, it doesn't only have to worry because it's the only Muslim country that has a nuclear weapon, and for sure it's on the kill list that the Israelis have, and it will be the last one on the kill list if Iran is destroyed. But you have to think about what will happen if the United States and or Israel drop a nuclear weapon on Iran, and or blow up a nuclear reactor. And in both cases, there would be a huge nuclear cloud and fallout on Pakistan immediately. And Pakistan is a very thin country, and it has very limited capacity of agricultural land, and it has to feed 280 somewhat million people from that very small part of land that is, arable in Pakistan. So if there's a nuclear fallout on Pakistan, the Pakistanis will be irradiated, and their land and their food will be unusable. They will die starving without even starting a war with them. And that's why we saw yesterday a tweet by the current Minister of Defense of Pakistan, replying to the son of the Shah, calling him an imperialist whore, right? Those are language that this tells you that actually Pakistan is truthful in this statement. And I believe Pakistan will go to war to defend Iran, no matter what, because of its survival as a nation, forget as a state. You know, those generals in the Pakistani military and the Pakistani intelligence that collaborated with the Saudis and the Americans for decades, they would collaborate with the Americans and the Saudis again if it wasn't, if it meant only the destruction of the state of Pakistan. They're sellouts. But when you're talking about the destruction of the nation, the poisoning of their land and their starvation, that means the children of these generals will be screwed. And that is why they are feeling that the existence of Pakistan is now linked directly to the existence of Iran.
Yeah, actually, they have suggested that they're going to send nuclear bombs if Iran needed, that they're going to send it to Iran to use them against Israel. And at least we know that the other sign, the other positive sign that Pakistan, before Israel attacking Iran, they have informed Iranian officials that the attack is coming. And these are good signs that show that how these two governments are close and they're negotiating, they're talking to each other, as you've mentioned. But when it comes to the attack on Iran and the Israeli attack on Iran, do you think that they somehow thought that they can put an end to Iranian nuclear program, or maybe they were so much delusional that they can, this sort of attack can bring some sort of so-called regime change in Iran?
Yeah, I mean, look, they are high on, you know, the euphoria of getting away with an ongoing genocide for 20 months to mass destroy Lebanon, to take over Syria, to get the West to fight the Yemen on their behalf. And so sometimes, you know, this euphoria is blind people to their actual limitations, right? Like the media tells us over and over that, you know, Israel is so great, it's getting away, fighting all these enemies and it's destroying them, when in reality it's the Americans and the West that is fighting these wars on their behalf. Israel has been defeated from day one on October 7th, and it was defeated in Lebanon, it was defeated in Yemen. Yes, they took over Syria, but that was the fault of the Russians, honestly, and the fault of the Syrian leadership. It wasn't a real fight. There was no real fight. It was a takeover by traitors and sellouts, okay? And so, but it seems like that the Zionists believed their own lie. And they actually now really believe that they're doing all these superhuman things. But I want to note that there was a piece that was written in a think tank in the United States at the time of Obama from 2009, that laid out what we see today. And in this think tank study that was commissioned for the by the Saban Center, one of the Zionist fronts think tanks in the United States, they lay out that Obama should sign a deal with Iran, on nuclear deal, and that then there should be a sabotage of this deal while, you know, the build-up and information gathering on the ground for a period of 10 years. They actually say what they want in terms of dates, gathering information on the ground, creating these sleeper cells and so forth. And then the United States crashes the deal and then blames Iran for it. And then Israel attacks, gets beaten, and then the United States enters. This is all laid out, okay, in this study, which is called Which Path to Persia? Options for a New American Strategy Towards Iran. Okay, this is from 2008. So, you know, the plan is clear. And I think the Iranian strategist and leadership must have read this piece just like I did. It's available everywhere. It's not that hard to read the output of these intelligentsia think tanks that in Washington, D.C. And so we're going this path. I think the Iranian military and government have been getting ready for this. The question that we should all ask ourselves, looking at how severe the damage is to the Zionist colony right now, this morning, I don't know if our viewers watched this, yesterday the Israelis did a media blackout, went on an arrest rampage, arresting all international journalists that were running cameras from Haifa and Tel Aviv and so forth, and shut them all down, took all their equipment, and now there's only one camera that was stationed, run by Israeli intelligence from Tel Aviv last night. And if ever people noticed, there was a misfiring of one of the Arrow missiles, clearly with sabotage from Iran, and that Arrow missile hit the actual battery, but the camera panned immediately away, right? So what has happened since last night is Iran destroyed the headquarters of the Mossad, the Shabak, and the Aman also this morning, and the three major air bases in the Zionist colony totally destroyed. Those videos from the Mossad headquarters today, now we have a geolocation even for them. It shows us that there's five missiles that hit in the various parts of the compound, clearly two of them directed towards bunkers under the ground. So we don't know the damage and the amount of Israeli intelligence officers that are dead and Air Force officers that are dead since last night. But it definitely prompted Trump to tweet that crazy tweet saying that, calling on all people in Tehran to evacuate. Trump wouldn't have tweeted that in the middle of the G7 meeting if he didn't get a call that Israel got screwed, you know, as he's speaking, and that some very high value targets were destroyed, that Israel is at the brink. He wouldn't have tweeted that. And he cut short his G7 meeting and rushed to the Situation Room in DC, which we expected. That means there will be a launching of the war immediately. But I think in the Situation Room, he must have gotten assessment telling him that if he attacks Iran right now, we're going to be in World War III immediately.
Leith, do you feel, I know that many countries for such a long time, because Israel was at war with Lebanon, with Palestine, with each and every country in that region, but from what we know from Israeli and their capabilities, are they really, can they really sustain a war of attrition with Iran?
I don't think they can sustain a war of attrition. And this is why the intent is to drag the United States into this war on their behalf. And just looking at the numbers of air defenses, missiles that are being produced by the whole combined West, calculating the number of batteries that the Israelis have of each of those weapons, the best case scenario is that Israel will have air defense missiles and batteries up to 15 days. That's the best case scenario. But what we saw over the last three nights is that Iran created a pathway all the way from the Golan Heights to Tel Aviv, where they cleared all the air defenses. They destroyed them. So now the missiles of Iran can reach Tel Aviv without being intercepted at all, right? And this is remarkable. The destruction is severe to the air defense systems. And over last night and the night before, there was a huge concentration of the attack power of Iran on the Golan Heights and North Palestine borders with Lebanon. Most of the videos that we saw were from Tel Aviv and or Haifa. We barely saw anything, and it already looked really bad. But can you imagine that the hits on Haifa and Tel Aviv were only like 20% of what was hit? So This is why the Israelis are really scared of a land invasion, a revival of Hezbollah or resistance in Syria at this moment. And that's why they rushed and pulled out 60 or 70% of their forces from inside Gaza and have redeployed them on the border with Lebanon and on the Golan Heights. And another thing that they're really scared about, the Israelis, is what could happen in the West Bank. And most people don't know this, but it's now been, now it's the fourth day that the West Bank is on lockdown. Nobody's allowed to get out of their home in the West Bank. I'm talking about the Palestinians. People are starting to run out of water and food. This is unsustainable. At any moment, the people are going to start coming out because they need to eat, they need to drink. And the Zionists are really worried if there's an uprising in the West Bank while missiles are hitting the Israeli bases in the West Bank. That's another thing that people are not noticing. We've had now three different colonies in this West Bank hit by Iran, including the colony where Smotrich and his treacherous family live, Kedumim colony. So there's if actually Iran concentrates a little bit more on the colonies in the West Bank will be liberated by itself, because these colonists are rushing out right now. There's not much air defenses to protect them in comparison to the central area where the Zionists live between Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. They're too dispersed to give them too much air defense to protect them.
Leith, I know that right now in Lebanon there may have some sort of argument, talks. What's going on in Lebanon? What is the main objective? What is the main discussion in Lebanon right now?
I think people are celebrating. I know sometimes we don't like to talk about these things, but you know, these 4 nights have uplifted the spirits of most of humanity, I think. Thanks and eternal gratitude to the Iranian people and the Iranian military, and our condolences to all their martyrs and their families. They are fighting on behalf of the whole world and humanity. Here in Lebanon, we've seen a lot of people actually purposely just go down to the beaches in Sur in the south, and the villages in the south, just to sit down and watch these waves of Iranian missiles cross. And the explosions in the northern colonies, bases of the Zionists, are so loud and so powerful that you can feel the ground shaking in Nabatiya, almost 20 kilometers away from the border. And you could hear the explosions. The horizon lights up. So this is how powerful these Iranian attacks have been. And, the Zionists have, for the most part, stopped doing anything other than flying a few drones over Beirut to harass people. But yesterday they did some really treacherous thing. The Zionists targeted a beekeeper in a field that we visited before as Free Palestine TV in the Hula town. They sent a drone through a missile at him while he's working on the bee houses and taking out honey. So it's clear the Zionists are so vicious. Anytime a real enemy, real warrior fights them, they go take it out on unarmed civilians, like this case of the Lebanese beekeeper.
Leith, do you feel that right now in the mainstream media, as they're talking about, they're trying to picture Iran as they're just begging for negotiation, do you think that they're preparing for somehow Israel accepting the defeat, or what's going on with the rhetoric right now?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely watching the Western media and the Western leaders over the last 4 days. I've felt for a long time that they have disassociated from reality, but the gap between reality and the fantasy in their head has really, I think, pushed them into a parallel universe at this moment. So to hear those statements by the Chancellor of Germany condemning Iran before it even retaliated, I was like, what? Who the hell wrote this? Did the Mossad write this for the guy and he pressed send before looking at it or what? And watching the how the Western media is trying to blame Iran for everything, again, the whole world watched Israel attack Iran. Iran didn't attack Israel. And the whole world watched them attack people in their homes, killing families and killing scientists and so forth. These are all war crimes. And now the whole world watched them attack the television station in Tehran yesterday. And that woman is now a national hero, that anchor that was on live television. And she was very collected and poised when she moved out of the camera. You could imagine a Zionist would have been like wailing and screaming and jumping like a rat under the table. The difference between that real journalist that works in the Iranian channel versus those Western propagandists is huge. I think, you know, it's becoming harder and harder for the West to convince anybody of its lies. I don't think their own population or themselves as leaders believe their own lies at this moment. You can see it in their face. They're not selling it correctly even, okay? When the day comes after the defeat of the Zionist colony, all those journalists in the BBC, especially the editor-in-chief of the news in the BBC, who's a Mossad agent, CIA agent, and or the editors in the CBC in Canada or ABC or CNN, all of those should be pursued to be dragged into a trial for their propaganda that aided in the commission of a genocide, and they should be put in front of a firing squad at the end of it, like the propagandists of the Nazis at the time. And this day will come, I am sure of it. I want to, you know, say one thing here is that this is not going to be a short war, and everybody should expect that we may find ourselves in a world war very fast, and that maybe nuclear weapons will be used. And if nuclear weapons are used, then we will all be dancing in a nuclear winter.
Leif, what was so much somehow different from on the Iranian part was the way that they have decided to respond to Israel. They didn't rush into a devastating, massive attack on Israel. They started with the waves of attacks. And in the final hours, they have decided, as you mentioned, it seems that they have decided to destroy the air defense systems. But how, when it comes to the waves of attacks, what's your evaluation? What's your take on the way that they have implemented the attacks? What were the main objectives of these waves?
Yeah, before I say that, I just saw a breaking news item. Former Iranian diplomat Al-Musawi announced that the captured American Israeli pilot of the F-35 will divulge their testimony and their admittance of committing crimes on Iranian television today, and that he will reveal, or I don't know, this pilot will reveal the locations where these jets are taking off from and getting refueled, because there's no more airstrips inside the Zionist colony that these jets are taking off from. They are taking off from either Jordanian or Cypriot or Greek air bases, and we will hear that being told to us by the Israeli pilot. Now, about the waves of Iranian retaliations, it was designed the first night, as we saw, to force all the air defenses to reveal themselves. There was a wave of old ballistic missiles that are 10 years old and older. And with that wave, we saw a few hypersonic missiles come in, pinpoint, target, and hit the air defenses, the aero systems, the Davis slingshot, and the FADS. And the second night, we saw more waves of hypersonic missiles with drones and ballistic missiles. And the second wave of drones was purposeful, I think, to force the lower altitude air defense systems like the Iron Dome and Patriot to fire and their radars to be indicated. And that's when we saw by the third night, which was last night, the waves of advanced drones target specifically the batteries of low altitude air defense systems across the whole north. And then now we see that the path that was opened in the first two nights for hypersonic missiles and ballistic missiles to reach from the Golan to Tel Aviv now is also open for low altitude cruise missiles and low altitude drones. That's what we saw since the morning. Cruise missiles and drones increasing in waves, and because of that path being open to them. So the strategy has been working really well. And you see, in this modern warfare, Iran has one weakness, which is that it's a huge country with 90 million people, where you can have infiltration through squads with a few drones here and a few ATGMs behind your lines, and that can make huge damage, as happened in Russia, which, by the way, they are the same teams that designed those same attacks. And Russia must understand that Israel is the one that attacked their nuclear bombers. It was Israel was the one that attacked Russia's nuclear bombers. They have to understand that. But that's the weakness for a country that's big. A country that's very small and thin like Israel, their weakness is that there's not many places you can hide things. A person can fire from right across the border into the deepest point in your land and you're screwed. And so both players have advantages and disadvantages. Iranians know that the main advantage that the Israelis have, other than these infiltration troops, is their air power from their jets. And that's why we saw Iran on the first night destroy the jet fuel refinery in the Haifa port before, at the second night, attacking the electricity generator factory in Haifa. They attacked the refinery that produces jet fuel, and all the storages and transportation nods for jet fuel across the whole country. So now the refueling of these Israeli jets cannot be done in Israel, period. They have to be done somewhere else. And we will see, I think, after the testimony of this captured F-35 pilot comes out, we will see Iran begin to target the jet fuel storage and refineries in any country that is participating in the refueling and housing of these jets.
What was happening in the initial hours that they were much of, I would say 90%, 80% of what has happened in Iran happened in the initial hours, that it was a surprise somehow to Iranian army, but the use of decoys, Iranian decoys, have somehow the most significant part of the defense of Iran, because they have attacked decoys in Iran. They thought that they destroyed a lot of weapons in Iran, which turned out to be not to be the case after all. It seems that Iran was surprised, but somehow was prepared for this attack. And do you think that this decoys, this strategy on the part of Iran, was one of the main aspects of the failure of Israelis in their attack on Iran?
Yes. I mean, that was brilliant. Obviously, it's not a new strategy, and everybody uses it currently.
By the way, they're still, sorry for interrupting, they're still attacking. Yesterday, we had the video of two Iranian F-14. They said that they destroyed them. Then later on, we learned that they were decoys. Go ahead.
Yes. So this is very important for Iran. You know, the Israelis can't really use much intensively these decoys, because there's not much places you can hide the real things, right? But in Iran, it's a huge country, and there's a limit to what your agents on the ground can confirm as targets. So you have to depend on satellites, because again, they can't fly your spy planes into Iranian airspace. And this is the biggest lie since day one. The Israelis are claiming that they have full operational control over Iranian space. That's the biggest lie on the planet. The Israelis are actually using their air force only to attack the east and the northeast, the west and the northwest of Iran, you know, western Azerbaijan, Kurdistan, Lur, and so forth provinces. And that's because they can't go into Iranian airspace. They have to fire from Iraqi airspace. As we saw, anytime they got close, they got fired on. And up until now, four F-35s have been shot down, and an MQ-9, an American MQ-9 Reaper drone, was also shot down over Iranian territory. So that shows you that it's all bluster and lies and propaganda, this idea that the Israelis have operational control over the Iranian airspace. So the Zionists are having to depend on satellite imagery to define their targets. Not on low-flying spy planes, not on ground operations of spies. And that's why it's a successful tactic by Iran. And we saw also Russia use this tactic. You know, some of those bombers, nuclear bombers that were attacked, were either old and not used and purposefully left out there to make it look like they're working, and or some of them were also decoys. So this is, and we will see an increase in the use of such tactic, and a more and more sophistication in how the decoys can fool somebody who's looking at them. Now, given that this has become a norm in warfare, so China for sure, which is a big country like Iran, like Russia, is going to be right now really worried about what the Taiwanese separatists are going to do with the Americans. That is very similar. And so we will be seeing more sophisticated decoy tactics and more sophisticated intelligence gathering and electronic surveillance equipment that's going to catch these swarms of drones when they attack.
It seems that the news came out late right now that the United States enforcement deployed to the Middle East is going to the Saudi Arabia. They're going to use Saudi Arabia, and they have F-35 and F-16 fighter jet are on route to Prince Sultan Air Base in Saudi Arabia. I think that Saudi Arabia would be the end of Saudi Arabia if they allow that, they get along with this sort of plan. Do you see these people understanding the gravity of the decisions on their part?
I think they understand, but a house slave has no choice in what they're doing. This dog, Mohammed bin Salman, will bark and will jump through the fire anytime their master tells them to. Okay. And I personally, by the way, I lived in Riyadh for 12 years. My two younger brothers were born in Riyadh. I know what Saudi is. I've lived through it all. I traveled all through the country. I know the people, and I understand how humble and loving the people of Arabia, not the Saud is the Saud family, goddamn the Saud family, to the end of time. But I say that the Arabic oil and gas in these Gulf countries have been the biggest curse on the Arabic and Muslim people. This oil and gas has financed the destruction of all the Arabic capitals, historical capitals of civilization. See, Damascus, Baghdad, Trablus, Tripoli in Libya, Sana'a. This oil and gas has funded the American and military war machine and the Israeli war machine for the last 80 years. And I wish and hope that when the Americans dare to take off from those air bases in Saudi Arabia to attack Iran, I wish and hope that Iran sets all the Arabic oil fields on fire, including the Syrian oil fields, including the Iraqi oil fields, including the Yemeni oil fields, which are all stolen. They're not, none of that oil in Syria and Iraq and Yemen is feeding the people of those lands. Burn it all. Let the whole West have to deal with the shortages of oil and gas, and let these money bags, these milking cows of the Gulf be slaughtered. Never again will there be money from Arabic resources dedicated to killing Arabs and Muslims. I don't want to see that one more day. And this was probably the biggest mistake over the last 80 years of any Arab liberation movement, including Jamal Abdel Nasser, including the Ba'ath Party, including everybody. Their biggest mistake is that they didn't attack these Gulf monarchies, these house slaves, first and foremost, before even trying to liberate Palestine. So let's hope the Saudis and the Americans are stupid enough to attack Iran from these Gulf countries. And let's wish the Iranian army and Iranian leadership the as much courage and fortitude to deliver a blow to these collaborationist regimes.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Laith, for being with us today. Great pleasure, as always.
Talk to you soon, inshallah. Be safe.
Take care. Take care. Bye-bye.